We're going to be thinking about those verses, just those short verses from Colossians 3. And also we're going to think a little bit about the story of Joseph from Genesis 39. And the focus today is discipleship in the workplace, with the workplace thought of broadly. Whatever is your front line, wherever it is that you spend most of your time. It might be as a homemaker. It might be that you work in a shop. It might be that you work in a business. It might be that you're a doctor. Wherever your daily work is, wherever your front line is, we are thinking this morning about discipleship on the front line, discipleship in the workplace. PowerPoint's going to come up on the screen, and you will see coming up a painting by L.S. Lowry. Okay, maybe not. In that case, I will describe them. Actually, you know these paintings, don't you? You know Lowry with his little matchstalk men, and they're scurrying around, and they are well-known paintings, and Lowry is a painter who has garnered a lot of comment, a lot of interest, and people are sometimes a bit sniffy about his paintings, art critics and so on, and yet he is loved by many, many ordinary people. He paints these large scenes of people going to and from work, people coming out of factories. And one of the reasons why he is loved, I think, is because he depicts life as it really is, working life as it really is, with its joys and its possibilities, but also sometimes with its sheer drudgery. Lowry also paints other scenes, and one of the things that he used to do was paint church buildings. Now, there is a building that he painted a couple of times, St. Augustine's Church in Pendlebury, which is near Manchester. And one of his paintings, and you can look it up online, from 1924, shows this huge dark monolith of a church, and it just fills the canvas. And instead of the normal bustling scenes with people going to and fro, you have just a couple of people walking away, and it seems so divorced from anything. It seems like it is just out on its own, and it's austere, it's not particularly relevant to anything else that seems to be happening. And so you have these workplace scenes on the one hand, all the hustle and bustle, the people going to and fro, and then you have the church, and it's not just one step removed, but it's two or three steps removed, and it's there as this great austere monolith, not particularly relevant to anything. When I saw that painting, St. Augustine's Church, I did think of it as a bit of a parable as to how it can be in churches sometimes. People are working 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or perhaps 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. if you're a shift worker. That's where we spend our time, our workaday lives. And yet church seems very removed from that and doesn't seem to have much to say into that. And so we're not equipped to serve God where we are in most of our lives. And yet the workplace, the front line, whatever that is for us, is an absolutely vital context for us. It is a place where we can do mission. It is a place where we can grow as disciples. It is a place where we can show the love of God. And the very work that we do, whatever it is, has value with God. And so we are going to think together about some principles of workplace discipleship, and then we're going to see how those principles are worked out in the life of one man. The principles, first of all, and we have them here in Colossians 3, and we see, first of all, that Jesus is Lord of the workplace. He's talking about those who were bond slaves, and I'll say a little bit about that at the moment, but here, in a context where people are working away, Jesus is Lord. The Lordship of Christ is mentioned explicitly 4 times in those short verses that we read. He is Lord of all. He is Lord of the workplace. And because he is Lord, then as we engage in workplace ministry, we can be really, really encouraged. And it's helpful maybe just to put the pause button in and for you to think about your workplace, whatever it might be, and to clock the fact that Jesus really is Lord. That difficult place of work, that difficult team that you're working with, those hard situations that you're having to deal with, Jesus is rightful Lord. Colossians 3:23-25 echo the message of the rest of Colossians, that there is not a split second, not a square inch over which Jesus is not Lord. He is Lord. And because Jesus is Lord, then the work that we do has great value. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. That's really, really exciting. And it should give us great encouragement and great dignity, whatever we do. The Apostle Paul is talking to those who were enslaved. And it wasn't generally as bad in the first century world as the enslavement that we might think about, the unspeakable chattel slavery that took place in the 18th and the 19th century in the former British colonies and in North America. It's terrible, it's unspeakable. It wasn't quite like that in the New Testament. We might even translate the Greek word doulos as bond servant, and that's how some of the translations render it. A servant or a slave, a bond slave, a doulos. They would have been able to buy their freedom. Most would have been given freedom when they reached the age of 30 anyway. They could save money. Some went into partnership with those who were formerly their masters. So generally, it's not as bad as we might think when we think about slavery. Nevertheless, these doulos, these douloi, they didn't have so many rights. They had to do particular things that they were told. Aristotle, the philosopher, talked about the douloi as living tools. And so it's not a great place to be. And yet Paul says to these people, about 80% of the population in some places in the Roman Empire, what you do matters. It really matters. The reality is that you're not serving people, you're serving the Lord, and you will get an inheritance for your service. One of the things about bond servants is that they couldn't inherit anything. And here Paul cuts against this and he says, you have an inheritance from the Lord as you do your work well. It's important. It has value. And this is a powerful, powerful thing for us, I think. Sometimes in the Christian world, we have a pecking order of different trades and occupations. So very often, if you're a cross-cultural missionary, you're at the very, very top. Then you're super, super holy, if that is you. Then pastors are a little bit below that. I'm sorry to say that, but I think that's the reality. And then you have other Christian workers, so-called. And then you might have people in the caring professions. You might have doctors, you might have nurses. A little bit lower, you might have teachers. And then as you go down and down and down, you get to people who work in business or in retail. Mark Green, who heads up the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity, talks in this way about the pecking order that we have of different trades and professions. He used to be an advertising executive, and he says, if you're an ad man, you are at the very, very bottom of this list. But actually, that's rubbish. Paul says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, for it's the Lord you're serving. You will gain an inheritance from the Lord. And so whatever we do, that has great value. Sometimes we say, I am just a whatever. So someone might be asked, well, what do you do? And they might say, well, I just work in a shop. Someone else might be asked what they do, and they might say they just work as a volunteer. Someone else might be asked, well, I'm just a homemaker. But actually, oh, I very much understand why sometimes people say that. The work that you do has great value. You don't get someone who says, I am just a brain surgeon. You don't have someone going up to Justin Welby and asking him, what do you do? And he says, I am just the Archbishop of Canterbury. God bless you, my child. That doesn't happen. People recognize that those professions, those occupations have great dignity, great worth. But what God's word says is whatever you do, even if you're a bondservant, even if you're a doulos, whatever you do, whether it is a physical, whether it's with your mind, whatever it is, that has value. And do it with all your heart, for it's the Lord you're serving. And so there are some key principles here in Colossians chapter 3. And I really want to encourage you. The big thing here, the big idea, is that we see what we do day by day as something truly valuable for God, as a context for ministry, as a context for mission. Whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart, for it is the Lord at the end of the day that you're serving. Many, many examples in the scriptures of people who engaged in workplace ministry. The Old Testament is especially rich, I feel, and we could have gone and we could have looked at Daniel, who was someone who was a high official in the Babylonian court. We could have looked at Nehemiah, someone who was a cupbearer to the Persian king, people who were in difficult situations, who were serving out of their comfort zone in professions that were high risk, high responsibility. Neither of them were priests, neither of them were pastors or ministers, and yet they were greatly used by God right where they were in kingdom work. What we're going to look at, though, is the story of Joseph. And if you do have a Bible near you, or if you've brought one with you, I want to encourage you to turn to Genesis chapter 39, which is on page 43 of our Bibles. So Genesis 39. We pick up the Joseph story when he is in the house of Potiphar. So in Genesis 37, he has been wrenched from his homeland. He has been sold into slavery by his half-brothers. And here he is in chapter 39 in Potiphar's house. and he is working away. He has risen to a position of prominence and influence in this difficult situation, and God is at work through him, and God is blessing him. So Joseph is in his workplace. He is working away for Potiphar, but five times the name of the Lord is mentioned explicitly. Joseph is in his workplace, but it is God who is at work first and foremost. God is working through him in this difficult situation, and God is blessing him, verse 5, and enabling him to be a blessing to others. As the story of Joseph unfolds, different pieces fit together, and there are many twists and turns along the way for him. Here in chapter 39, it looks as if everything is unraveling, and he is faithful to God, and yet he finds himself in a very, very difficult spot indeed. And yet God is working, and God is blessing. And I do want to encourage you in your own places of work, whatever it is that you do, to see where God is at work. God is there with you in this seemingly impossible situation, far from home, far from the people of God, isolated. Joseph knows God's blessing. God is there with him in the workplace. He's working, he's leading, he's overruling, he is doing something, and Joshua is able to join in with the work of God. What is God doing where you're at work, on your front line? Where is God touching people's hearts? What is it that you're doing that is valuable to him? Do it well. Be aware of how God is working, and be encouraged in the workplace. God is blessing. But there is also a huge challenge that Joseph is facing. A number of you will know the story. Potiphar has put Joseph in charge of the whole household, and it sort of seems that Potiphar himself has withdrawn from the situation, and Potiphar's wife wants Joseph to sleep with him. And he won't do it, and he shows great integrity. And Potiphar's wife, who in a sense would have been over him, would have had power over him, is asking him to do something which Joseph knows is against God, and he won't do it. Goes back to those principles that are there in the heart of God, that are written for us in Colossians 3. That yes, we owe obedience to our earthly employers, but only insofar as that doesn't contradict with our greater obedience to God, to the revealed commands of God, to our call to be Christian disciples in the workplace. Joseph did his work well. God blessed him. Potiphar was blessed through it. But when he was asked to do something that was clearly against God, he would not do it. He showed great integrity. There are times when you will be challenged in this way in workplace situations, where there might be the challenge of sexual temptation, which is the specific thing here. There might be a challenge to adopt some practices that are sailing close to not being legal and perhaps stepping over the line. There might be financial temptation. There can be all sorts of things that come to us, and there can be great pressure on us to conform. And yet God calls us to be different and to show integrity in the workplace. Maybe that one or two of you are in a situation like that just now. There is temptation, there is a real challenge, and the challenge just to turn a blind eye, or just to sail close to the wind, or just to go with the flow is greater. And God is saying to us by his word and by his spirit, I want you to show integrity in the workplace. Whether the temptation is sexual or financial or whether it's something else, show integrity. Be different. Be salt and light where God has placed you. It's especially hard when the pressure is on and it's intense. Hudson Taylor, the cross-cultural missionary, was once sitting with a group of people who were going to be working in China with him. And they had their drinks set out in the table, and they were there, and it was quite a relaxed scene. And suddenly Taylor, who by all accounts was a pretty fearsome guy, took the table and he shook it. And the drinks flew everywhere, sort of pouring over the table, over people's laps, over people's knees, onto the ground. There was all this confusion and hubbub. And then he looked his missionaries in the eye and he said, "When God shakes you, what comes out? When God shakes you, what comes out?" In your workplace situations, your front line, wherever that may be, when God shakes you, what is it that comes out? God calls us to be filled with the Holy Spirit daily, to grow Christian character, and to show integrity in the workplace. And then there's one final thing as we bring this to a close. God works through Joseph, and he's doing kingdom work, and God blesses him. He shows integrity in the workplace, but also he is changed. People read the story of Joseph in different ways, but I am convinced that Joseph wasn't some superhuman, super spiritual person who never ever did anything wrong. You read that in some expositions of the stories of Joseph, and I think it's wrong. In chapter 37, and you might just want to flick back to that, Joseph is with his brothers and he gives what the NIV translates as a bad report about his brothers. There are these dreams that he's having as well, and he doesn't, I think, come across as a great character. He's been spoilt by his father and by his mother, Rachel. And that word, a bad report, in Hebrew it's debar, can be translated as something malicious, something that isn't entirely truthful. And probably that's the sense here. He gives this bad report on his brothers. And he does come across as someone who is a bit holier than thou, a bit stuck up, a bit spoiled. Would Joseph have shown such integrity, the integrity that he shows in chapter 39, if he had been as he was in chapter 37? I think the answer is no. And what God has been doing is he has been working on Joseph. He has been working in Joseph through this hardship that he's now experiencing. The spoilt son, the one who wanted for nothing, sold into slavery, working in this difficult situation, far from home. God is honing him. God is working on his character, growing stickability, growing integrity. So when the moment comes, Joseph shows integrity. For us, God uses us in the workplace. He uses us in mission and ministry, but he also wants to do something in us. He also wants to hone us. He also wants to shape us. And one of the things about workplace ministry, I think, is to not only think about how we're serving, but how God is working in us and changing us. One final story. It's a personal illustration from my time at Spurgeon's College. People know this, so if the recording gets back to people at Spurgeon's, they will know this as a reality, that life at the college, particularly for the five-year period when I was there at the end, was often a challenge and it was often a struggle. And we went through all sorts of things And as vice principal and then as acting principal, I had to deal with a lot of stuff. And sometimes it was difficult, sometimes it was challenging. There were meetings where people were made redundant. There were meetings where we were wrestling with the structure of the college. And it was hard day by day by day. And God was with me, God was with us. And so many positive things happened, but it was tough. And for a while, I was just thinking, how is God using me in this situation? How does God want to use me? But a guy that I see who is a spiritual mentor, a spiritual director essentially, said to me in one of our sessions, we need to think about this back to front as well. Yes, God is using you, and we need to think about that, and we need to pray about that. But what is God actually saying to you? How is God honing your discipleship? How is God working holiness, patience, perseverance, kindness in you? How is God growing you in the life of discipleship through this challenging situation? I want to encourage you not just to see your workplace, your front line, as places for mission and ministry. Indeed they are, and that is so, so important. God has great value on what you do. And so be encouraged and engage in mission and ministry up to the hilt. But also see how God is shaping you, how God is polishing you, how God is honing you, changing you, growing holiness, growing godly virtues in you. How does God want to change you in the situation that we're in? We are called to be disciples of Jesus, not just on a Sunday, not just in the evenings, not just when we engage in churchly things. We are called to be 24/7, 360 degree disciples. How is God using you on your front line? And how does God want to change you as you engage with him and his purposes for the world? Let's just spend a moment in quiet and prayer, and then we're going to have one final song, and then we'll close. But let's just be quiet together for a moment.